Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Branson, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, good morning, Susan. It's Halloween time. It's going to be a great Halloween show today. We're going to talk about things that go bump in the night and in the daytime. And I think Halloween is it's growing to be one of the most important holidays in America, especially in terms of monetary expenditure in the stores.
You mean more than Christmas?
It's pushing it real hard.
Actually, that's a great lead in. The song that we're going to be using for our music today is called The Nightmare Before Christmas. So maybe Halloween is the nightmare before Christmas. We should have a fun show today. It's Halloween week. From Back from the Dead walk at the Story County Conservation Center last weekend to the Nevada school play Murder in the Knife Room. We have a variety of events to talk about.
Well, Susan, let's start with the walk.
Well, there were a lot of them out at the Conservation Center at 10-minute intervals starting at 5:30 and ending at 8. They were all led by volunteers. But I was fortunate that the volunteer we'll be talking to is Linda Zolotel, who was Story County Conservation Naturalist for 33 years before her retirement in the spring of 2012. So a little ghosty music before we start.
You like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween. This is Halloween.
Hello. Hi, Linda.
Susan, how are you?
Fine. Did you hear the music?
Oh, yes. I recognized it.
So, how can you have a Back from the Dead walk at the Story County Conservation Center?
Well, you know, really, I'm going to start at the beginning. And back in 1985, Story County had its first Halloween hike. And the idea behind that was that some county conservation boards, like Blackhawk County, they were putting on Halloween hikes that were not scary, but more about the environment, letting people know about certain animals or plants or different things like that. And so our first one was in 85.
Was it mostly about animals and plants and not scary?
Yes, all of them were. And then, well, I should say that after our hike, we'd have hot cider and homemade cookies. And we attracted a lot of people at that time. It was kind of a shaky start, of course, with the 15 minutes and the people would go out in the different stations. And we did have some people that were pumpkin carvers, and they still carve the pumpkins since the beginning. Joan and Dave Ballard and the Larrabees, I even have photographs of them with their kids carving, and now their kids are grown and they have grandchildren. And they were even helping out this year. A lot of pumpkins went out onto the prairie and into the woods to kind of help guide the path.
That's the way you should use pumpkins, I think.
I think so, too.
But the pumpkin carving wasn't part of the event. It was to make the pumpkins to be along the path. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So when did you start to make it scary?
You know, it's never really been scary other than the pumpkins had funny faces and scary faces, and the inside of the building has been decorated kind of spookily. And then, of course, going out in the night is like bump in the night. We're hiking in the evening when it's dark, and the volunteer guide would hold the lantern and hold it up when the actor would do their skit, and then we'd move on. And so it was more the scary part was being out in the dark.
So you say was. Has anything changed?
No, not really. Some of the things, like I said, the pumpkin carvers, some of the volunteers have been volunteering for all that time. I think some of the things that have changed is in the beginning, we used to write the scripts for the actors. And nowadays, the naturalists there at Story County have used students from Iowa State in the Natural Resource Department. And they're writing their own scripts, which frees up some time for the naturalists and allows them to learn about Halloween hikes, because many of them are going into the interpretive naturalist field, and they're learning how to do it themselves.
Well, now, Linda, why did you choose Back from the Dead for this year's theme? How did that come about?
Well, I'm not really sure how that one came out. I will tell you that oftentimes it was the naturalist sitting down at a table in the back of the building and brainstorming and coming up with ideas and telling jokes because they would fit into the scripts. And then basically we'd get going so fast and furious that we'd finally come up with the theme and the animals that we wanted or the plants or even people types we wanted in it. And then all of a sudden we had a list, and that's how it pretty much came up.
That's the way brainstorming goes all the time. How many volunteers does it take to put this on every year?
Well, I would say 25 to 30. You've got about 17 guides or more. You've got campfire hosts that start the campfire and get the drinks and the cookies out. You've got a coordinator, which is a couple of the naturalists. You have someone that goes around and checks the pumpkins. And that was another change. We don't light the pumpkins with candles anymore, especially standing in the prairie. That's not too good of an idea.
No, it's a bad idea.
They use lights, but you still need someone to go around and check and maybe hand out some hot liquid or to the actors, because they have to do this like 17 times in a row. They're little skits.
What size is each group that goes around on the walk?
Well, it varies. When we started, we tried to keep it about 15 per group, but there were some groups that went up to 30, depending on how many extra people would show up. But this year, I think it was around 15 people per group.
And how many participants did you have altogether? How many folks came to this event this year?
Well, I don't know that one either. I do know that through the years, we averaged around 300 people. And starting from the beginning and to almost the very end. There were some years that we had a smaller number because of weather. But this year, it was a beautiful night out, and the weather was absolutely perfect for hiking around the park.
Well, what do you do when the weather goes bad?
I was in another Halloween hike that it torrentially poured. And we were standing on a hill. And finally, someone decided that it was too dangerous for anyone to walk up that slippery hill. However, in Story County, we have been exceptionally lucky because we've never run into wet weather, maybe a little mist and a full moon out, which really added to the ambiance. But we've had really good weather.
So you've been fortunate most years that it's good weather, and I'm sure that that looks very, very sinister out there if the right shadows come up. How do children like this thing?
You know, they come from infant all the way to high school. A lot of the families come. Their kids are dressed in costumes. We've taken many pictures of the kids in cute little animal or whatever they're dressed as. And even the adults often come in costume. So they make it a family affair. But this year was very cute. There was a little girl on my hike, and she was fascinated by the actors. And she would laugh and giggle at them and stood right in front of them. She was just a doll and thoroughly enjoyed the hike.
Well, I think what we take away from this is that today, those who are naturalists or promoting conservation are doing very creative things to make it interesting to the general public and to draw people in. And I really credit you and your group for doing this. I'm sure you have people who make it an annual event. You see the same faces a lot every year, I bet.
Yes, we do.
Well, I have a question about the scripts, because it's not clear to me just how far they stray from the naturalist theme. Do you have stories about the... what are the scripts like?
A hike that I called Prairie Yesteryears. And basically, the scripts, like one person was the farmer, and he talked about breaking the land in the prairie for the first time and some of the history behind the steel plow from John Deere, et cetera. And so they were researched and then pretty much written in an outline so that the actor could know the facts and be able to interpret that and act it out for the group.
How is this Halloween instead of just something like Living History Farms?
It's Halloween, and it's a hike in a spooky, dark area, but with fun facts about important environmental issues.
I think it's interesting how Halloween has evolved in my lifetime from scary and sinister and mischief by teenagers into humorous, funny, entertaining, and non-threatening to children. There are so many events I know about going on during Halloween week that are child-friendly, and most costumes today, too, are humorous and fun.
Yes, they're humorous and fun, and there's a lot more concern about not being offensive than there was when I was growing up. You didn't even think about whether something was offensive when I was growing up. You dressed up as a witch or a goblin or a gypsy just because this is World War II. Gypsies were truly threatened, but gypsy fortune tellers were one of the costumes.
And I remember there was always a lot of mischief in my hometown, and that tradition is pretty much dissolved. You don't hear about that anymore. Maybe occasionally, but I just think there are so many events to choose from. Just in my town of Story City, on Halloween night, there are two specific events aimed at children, and they're fantastic activities. One of them is at the nursing home, where kids can interact with all the elderly at the nursing home, and it's just fun, and the kids have a ball. And this walk that we're talking about at the Conservation Center, I hope that lasts forever, Linda.
Oh, I hope so, too. It still is a lot of fun to be involved, and the naturalists have a good time, too. It's a little hairy getting ready, but the joy of watching the kids and hearing that good information about the environment, and that can be spooky itself, that, like this year, the black rhino endangered, or almost, I think they're extinct. So just some fun things to do.
Ooh, that's a scary thought. The Extinct Animals March, how would that be for a scary, scary Halloween?
I bet a ghost rhino would be very frightening.
Well, thank you so much, Linda. It's been wonderful to hear about walks past and present. Do you have anything that we've forgotten to ask you?
Well, I'm going to mention a couple longtime people. Bill Hareen was known in Story County and around the state for his wildlife on TV and radio. And he was one of our actors until, like, he was in his late 80s. And, again, the Joan and Dave Ballards, the Larrabees, and the volunteers, how can we thank them enough for spending a night out in the cold and out in the weather? It's just a truly wonderful thing that volunteers would help us with.
I think you're talking about a labor of love.
Yes.
Well, thank you for all your years as a labor of love. I know being employed at the Story County Conservation Center, even though it's a profession, is also a labor of love. Thank you so much, Linda Zolotel. I appreciate your coming on with us, and we now need to move to another outdoor venue. So let's have a little more scary music.
Stairs, fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Wow, that's a good piece of music to come second after that march, after the walk.
Well, it's very scary. I may be turning on my nightlight tonight for the first time in years.
Yeah, sleep with the light on, Paul.
Well, I tell you what, it's so nice to be in this season again, to see all the kids having fun. And I remember one Halloween not too long ago when we had this terrible ice storm. So I'm very, very happy to see that we're having such moderate weather this year and all these events can take place trouble-free.
Well, now we have another outdoor event, and we have Beth Wessel-Crichel to tell us about it. Hello, Beth. Are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for coming to our studio. Let's take just a minute for a station break. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Co-host Paul Wearson and I have been talking with Linda Zalatel about the spooky and informative walk at the Story County Conservation Center. Now, I know you had a pretty interesting event over at Ryman Gardens. And tell us a little bit about who you are at Ryman Gardens and about your part in this event.
Well, I am the events coordinator for Ryman Gardens. So I plan and implement the public events that take place at the gardens. We had last weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, from 4 to 7, we had what we call Spirits in the Gardens. It's an annual event. And we had over 1,300 people who came and enjoyed the experience.
Well, then it's certainly a regional event and not just a local Ames event, right?
That's right. I was talking to one mother who is originally from the central Iowa area, but she's now living in Phoenix and said she came home for the fall because she wanted to introduce her daughter to fall and fall activities, and Spirits in the Garden was one of her choices, we're happy to say.
Well, Beth, what is the event like? This is Paul, by the way. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. The event is a little bit of trick-or-treating. We have 7 trick-or-treat stations at least. And this year we had a special edition where students from the apparel and design school had a special class. They did this also in 2011 for us, and they made costumes based on our theme. Our theme this year was a garden odyssey focusing on science fiction and space, and so they made alien costumes, and we had student models wearing those costumes at the gardens. The names of some of those costumes were Jaded Layla, Scaly Invasion, Royal Damsel, and Flowers from Far Out. It was a huge highlight. We also have, of course, the trick-or-treating the candy. We have crafts. We have pumpkin broom ball. And the wildlife clinic is also a part of our event. So they came out and had 3 different stations with owls and raptors and a possum.
Now tell me about Ernie the Possum. Is he famous or what? What does he do?
You know, he walks around in a lot of circles. The poor guy is blind. Apparently they tried to domesticate him at one point, and he was found in the wild, but quite domesticated. So they keep him now, and he sure is a lot of fun to watch and a great opportunity to get up close to wildlife.
Say, just a minute. We're having a little trouble hearing you. Is your phone, are you carrying your phone? Is it away?
I'll get it out. Is this better?
Yes, it's better. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
To get back to the possum, it's hard for me to imagine a possum being cute. My experience with possums is when I would see them at night and they'd hiss at me and make really, really scary noises. So a friendly possum in the daytime must be a different experience.
Well, this one, again, was, they believe, domesticated, and he is blind, so he basically just walks around in circles. And they told me he walks around in circles no matter how large of an area they give him.
That was the way I was this morning when I got up. There's no problem
there
at all.
There you go. This one had a little Superman cape on for the event, which was very nice of him to dress for our in costume for our event. And I'm not sure I'd want to pick him up. They say his claws are very sharp, so you wouldn't want to pick him up. Excuse me. But he is
friendly in the fact that he does not hiss.
Now, what activities were there for children there? Were there some hands-on things they could do? Or?
Absolutely. We tried to make our crafts a little bit educational and related back to the garden. We had a bumblebee, an owl. We even had an emerald ash borer craft. You can still see some of those if you walk through the gardens today. Some of the emerald ash borers that they made, we've put on a poster. We also have masks. They made three different kinds of masks, and there was a pumpkin activity. We also had a pumpkin hut that our hort staff, Sharon Rink from our hort staff, created. And it was made of corn stalks and pumpkins and beautifully decorated with gourds and squash. It was just a lot of fun and a great place to go have your picture taken.
So with 1,300 people there, I imagine there were lots of people taking pictures.
There were a lot of people, that's right. A lot of kid Halloween pictures taken at Ryman Gardens this last weekend.
Do you ever have a problem with too many people at one time?
You know, we haven't had that problem. We do it over two days, and we do have 17 acres. So, on the other hand, I will tell you, I did not work in 2012 when we had nearly 3,000 people. It was the year of our Lego display, which was probably our most popular display ever. And so that was a few times we have been a little overwhelmed. We always have, but I would say that's probably the only time. And when our Legos come back in 2016, we will be prepared for the crowds.
What is it about Legos? They're just magic, aren't they?
Absolutely magic. I have a whole closet full of them upstairs for my son. And let me tell you, he's nowhere near getting rid of them at 17.
Well, you know, in our previous segment, we discussed a walk through the Conservation Center area, and then we hear about your activities there. It strikes me that we're raising a whole generation of children who are very environmentally aware and aware of the need for conservation, and they have an understanding of animals and nature and how things all fit together. And it's a credit to you and people who are volunteering with these projects that it's done in a creative, entertaining, and involving way for children, because that lesson, I think, is so graphic when you have hands-on activities and so many visuals that it must stick in the minds of children forever and influence their attitudes toward nature, conservation, preservation of animals. All of these things are really very nice to have happen, and they're being done as a celebration. It's just wonderful. I'm very happy to hear about all this stuff today.
Yeah, we are. I think that's our whole point. We want to enchant, we want to inspire, and we want to educate all at the same time. And it's important to get kids outside and to be able to actually interact with their environment so they appreciate it.
Well, I'm so impressed that the numbers are there for you. You know, when you put on something, you hope that people come, and you don't have any fear about that at all. And they don't have that fear over there at that garden walk either. You know, at the Conservation Center, it seems to be very popular, these activities, and also families probably are establishing an annual event to go to at your activity and others in the county, and that's wonderful because families love rituals and kids like to go back to what they did last year, too.
Yeah, certainly it's a tradition for a lot of families. One thing that I didn't mention is Jerry Hyde from the Ames Public Library comes out and does storytelling in our formal garden. And what's so neat to see is that she always has a crowd. I mean, there's just never a time where there aren't kids around her listening and participating. I mean, she's very participatory in how she tells the story. So it was another fun part of our event.
Well, it sounds like you had lots of fun parts of your event in addition to the education. And you had, I gather, beautiful weather. Isn't that right, too?
It was absolutely perfect. There was a little wind for one of the big, one of our costumes that was designed for us had huge butterfly wings on it. It was a little windy on Sunday, so we put that costume and model into a more protected area, but that's the only thing we could complain about. It was absolutely perfect. And I also need to mention that we had over, I think we had 107 volunteers, and they came from Ames High, Gilbert, Ballard High Schools, Iowa State University Clubs, fraternities and sororities, and some of our stable volunteers that always come out for Ryman Gardens events.
That's the real story, too. The volunteers involved in not only your project, but other ones we've gone through today and looked at. It just seems that volunteers are the core of the effort. And then when you think about all the people who are motivated to come out as a volunteer, I think that the same truism is always there. The volunteer gets as much as they give.
Absolutely. And we just couldn't do it without them.
Well, thank you for doing it and having such a stimulating and exciting event every year.
Thank you.
Right here in Ryman Gardens. Well, thank you, Beth. And
thank you, Beth, for being with us today.
Great. Thank you very much. It was good to be here.
Well, this is KHOI 89.1, and that was Beth Wessel-Crichel, who is the events coordinator at Ryman Gardens, telling us about Spirits in the Garden, which was their annual extravaganza, really, out last weekend. And let's have a little more Halloween music.
I love it. I love it.
Halloween, red and black. Aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine. Say it once, say it twice. Take a chance and roll the dice.
Okay.
Now, since we're talking about annual events that people have missed this year, we really shouldn't forget the Pumpkin Express. That's the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway's Pumpkin Train.
Yes, whether it was Halloween or leaf peeping, the Pumpkin Train certainly had beautiful weather for it. Unfortunately, no one from Boone could join us this morning for a report. But we can pretty well imagine what it was like and make sure that people keep it on their in their calendars for next year. But it's interesting just to tell about it. How was this advertised?
Well, the advertised features include ride the train across two bridges to the valley floor. That sounds exciting. Every child gets to select their very own pumpkin. That's cool. The ride is approximately 1 hour and 15 minutes in length, depending upon how long it takes children to pick out their pumpkins.
Well, they pick them out. They don't carve them.
Yeah, that's yes. Right. But, you know, children can argue a long time about which pumpkin is the best. So that might delay the train once in a while. But it sounds great. The Pumpkin Express by the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad's Pumpkin Train.
Well, I have to tell a story about a ride that I took on a fall train. It wasn't a pumpkin train. It wasn't Halloween. I had a friend, Denny Lindemann, who was a volunteer, worked, I believe, as a brakeman, but I'm not quite sure. But because of that, he had a privilege to let his guests be on the caboose. So we got to see the fall scenery from the caboose, and it is truly a spectacular, wherever you see it from. It is a very spectacular ride this time of year.
Well, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad is just a great institution. We've been over there to look at the museum on an earlier field trip. And the ride itself, out that beautiful bridge and throughout the beautiful forested areas around Boone, is just a real experience. They have the dinner train. And I'm very happy to see that they have a special event during Halloween for the children, too. It's just a great idea. And that is one of the great attractions of Central Iowa, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
Yes, it is. So that's another great annual event. Now, when we're talking about annual events, there was another one, which I'm sure is repeated in other places, but the nursing homes have visitors. Children come to the nursing homes, and I know I talked to someone over in Nevada, and it's the high point of the year for the residents of the nursing homes when the children come to visit them.
Oh, yes. We have the same at Bethany Manor in Story City. In fact, in Story City, I live in the country, so I don't get trick-or-treaters. But I go up to a friend's house, and they've let me hand out the candy. And I've found out in recent years that there aren't many coming to the door because they're at these special events. in Story City, there's a downtown trick-or-treat event going on downtown in the business district. Right after that is the Bethany Manor Party, and that's a hot dog feast and everything. So the kids are too tied up to go door-to-door anymore.
Well, it sounds like at Bethany Manor, the kids definitely are the beneficiaries of this event as much as the residents of the nursing home.
Well, I think nursing homes have become a much different type of environment in recent years. You see animals and dogs and all these things that really enhance the life at the retirement home or the nursing home. And it's really been found that intergenerational things with children really enhance the experience for older folks. And it's just an event when these kids come, because they all have grandchildren and they can relate to that. And the kids, I think, are fascinated by what goes on there at these parties. You know, it's fun to watch.
Oh, and when so many children don't have grandparents around, it's wonderful to be able to interact in a fun way with older people.
Well, we just know so much about how people work and how people think, and that people have needs at every age, and that there are so many things that intergenerationally can be shared between very young children and very elderly folks, especially those who don't get out that much. It's just anything that comes into the home, whether it's Christmas caroling or any of these events where the community from the outside comes in. That's a big day if you're in a nursing home. And this is a big day for the children, because anytime there's candy and something going on, what kid can sit idle?
You've got the secret ingredients.
I'm still a child in many ways. You probably noticed that.
Well, let's hear what's next on our Halloween music.
I am the clown with the tearaway face. Here in a flash and
bubble the trace.
I am the who in the cuckoo's there.
I am the wind blowing through your hair.
I am the shadow on the moon at night, filling your dreams to the brim with fright.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
Thanks for listening to our special 7-county edition of Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio 89.1. Halloween, where we explore the people, stories, and events in the outlying area of our listening area in central Iowa. Your county reporter Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen now have an interview with the director of the Nevada High School play that will be performed at 7 p.m. on October 31st and November 1st. I'm here with Karen Niblock.
I'm the high school drama director at Nevada High School, and I teach sixth grade at the middle school.
Who is the director, I believe, of the Nevada High School play? Could you tell us a little about that?
We are doing Murder in the Knife Room by Jonathan Rand on October 31st and November 1st at 7 o'clock in the evening. It's a murder mystery parody. And the kids lovingly refer to it as Clue on steroids, so we're having a lot of fun.
Well, I thought it must be Clue when I saw Murder in the Knife Room.
Oh, yes. We have a wealthy dowager and a pompous millionaire and an obvious stoner, a brainless model, all kinds of suspects that are just a lot of fun.
And you said you had a big cast.
The cast is 34 plus 11 tech people. So we have 45 students.
And you said something about 20 of them on stage at once?
The 20 suspects and the inspector are on stage the entire show. They never leave the stage.
That must be a pretty difficult show for them.
It is. It's been interesting to help them really develop characters, and not just for a few moments, but to be able to stay in character when you're not the main focus of the scene, to be able to keep your energy level, your body movements, especially when you're not speaking, been a very unique challenge, but the kids have really responded well.
In your regular classroom, you don't have these students, right?
No. I teach sixth grade here at the middle school. I teach science and social studies, but I've worked as the drama director, so I do the plays and the musicals, since 2006.
So have you been teaching here long enough so that any of the students who are in your cast were sixth graders in your class?
About half of them. We have two separate teams for sixth grade, and so about half of them I had in school. The rest of them I just get to know through the plays and the musicals we do here at the middle school also. And so I know pretty much all of them before they come to me to audition for the shows. A few of them surprised me.
How did you decide to do a Halloween play? That's a little early for a school play, isn't it?
It is. It's on the early side. We are really looking to develop our acting and to develop that craft. And so in order to do that, we looked for a show that really had a wide, broad spectrum of characters. And when I read this show, I just fell in love with it. Jonathan Rand is so rich, and he does such a nice job with the characters. And we really wanted to work on the acting piece, so we kind of put it together, and then it was, oh, Halloween weekend's open, let's do that. So they kind of pulled it together in about 7 weeks, which is pretty fast.
Are you nervous about coming up on opening night?
Or? No, not at all. We have our dress rehearsal tonight, and I'm really excited to see what the kids do with their characters now that they're actually going to be in costume. Because being a small school, we also have regional volleyball going on, and our team is probably going, what we're hoping is going to go to state. And so we really are working with shared cast members and shared players. And so this is our only dress rehearsal tonight, and then we'll have two more run-throughs, but our dress rehearsal's tonight, Tuesday night. I'm not nervous at all.
One of the things I've noticed in looking at the schedules of the schools is that sports are huge. They're huge everywhere. You can tell from looking at the newspapers, they're huge. But when I look for activities, I can hardly find plays and even choir events. So apparently you're running into that even with the school play.
We do. We're sharing cast members. And so Thursday night we have a run right after school, and then they have a volleyball game that evening. But we share cast members very well. The spring musical will have probably almost 25% of the entire population of the high school involved. So we will have basketball players, we'll have wrestlers, we'll have cheerleaders. We just work around all of it, and we love it. And they do a really great job of balancing their commitments and getting things done. And I've always been about making sure that if you want to be in the play, we figure out a way for that to happen.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about this particular play?
This is a great play in that the students really put their all into these characters. It's hilarious. Jonathan Rand has written a beautiful play from the comedy standpoint. And so it's just one that we really have embraced. And I'm looking forward to seeing the audience really enjoy this.
How large is your auditorium?
600.
Oh, so you're not likely to run out of room, or do you think you might?
Well, it's hard to know. Our plays usually get 300 about. The musical last year, we actually had two shows that were virtual sellouts. They weren't quite, but it was close enough that you couldn't hardly find a seat.
Do you think that the Halloween weekend will bring in more people?
Well, actually, the Halloween weekend, I have several middle schoolers who are planning to attend because they're going to go trick-or-treating first. And I told them, come in your costumes, just come have fun. And so they're going to come right after they get done trick-or-treating and watch the show. And a lot of the high school students are starting to buy tickets. It might be one of our more popular shows we've ever done for a fall play.
And I asked you about the opening night party, and you said that there wasn't going to be an opening night party. Tell about that.
Well, there can't be an opening night party because we have kids involved in cross country, and they have state cross country the next morning. So we have a closing night party. So we'll have our party on Saturday night, not on Friday night, because some of our cast members have to get to bed so they can go run in a cross country meet the next morning. So,
is this more common in a smaller high school?
Oh, yeah. It's very common for our students to have multiple roles in different things, sports, plays, all of those types of things. We don't specialize the way they do in the bigger high schools, which means that at times we don't get quite as sharp of a production. But actually, I found our productions to, to be pretty top quality. So it gives the kids a chance to try just about everything if they go to a school this size.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was nice to have you here.
Yes. Well, that was a fun interview for me. Last week we were both together over at Colonesco and with a comparably enthusiastic teacher. Boy, it's impressive to meet these grade school teachers who obviously love teaching those kids.
Yeah, we did this a feature last week on Speak Up, which is an RSVP program that's held in several area schools. And I do that program, so I come in contact with these wonderful teachers who are very inventive about fitting that program into their language arts program at school. And what Karen talks about here is so typical of 1A, 2A, and 3A schools in Iowa. In Roland's story, we have a 2A school, and I go to all the activities I can, and sports, and actually, the arts have as much status at our school as sports do. And she's right about kids having to do multiple things in school, because when you look at the spring musical at Roland Story, and I'm sure at Nevada or any of these schools, the football boys are dancing in the chorus. So when you go to a 2A school or a 1A school or any small school, you come out so experienced in a variety of venues. You've been on the basketball court, the football field. You've been in the play. You've been in the choir. You play the trombone or some instrument. And that really gives you a remarkable versatility and experience and background. When I went to Luther College in Decorah, a lot of the students were from large schools in Chicago and Milwaukee, and they couldn't believe that I could be in track, football, band, chorus, in the play. And it just hit me then that I'd been taking for granted the rich experience that a small school offers. And when you talk about that play, it's very hard for a teacher to select the right play for the fall play. It's got to be funny. It's got to be well-written. It has to have a large cast. You know, you want to involve as many students as possible. And when you have that number of students, not all of them are gifted at being on stage. And so you have to be patient about having them slow down and project their voice and learn about character and doing character and staying in character. I've done some theater myself. But there are kids who just really grow into that, and they get so close. When you're in a play, it's like a family for a certain period of weeks where you get very close because you're involved in the same project, and that's a fun chemistry to watch, too. So, yes, the teacher is staying way beyond class hours for all these evening rehearsals, and then there's the drama of the final performance, and then that great cast party at the end. So that's a labor of love, too. We've been talking about labors of love today. That's a labor of love because that teacher began her day at 8 o'clock in the morning, and rehearsal gets out at 9:30 or 10 at night, and you got to be in love with your job to do that.
And to do all that juggling. And I believe that some of the students who are in that play are going to be listening, so I'd like to give a special shout-out for your good luck in your volleyball games and in your track meets.
I don't suppose you'd say break a leg.
No, I don't think.
Not for a track meet. For the theater.
Why do you say that in the theater?
Well, you know, it's an old tradition. Someone was talking about that on public radio the other day. It has something to do with your leg coming out from behind the curtain to enter the stage. Everyone hopes to get on stage, so it means break a leg, let your leg get onto the stage from behind the curtain, something like that. Break a leg means you're on.
Oh, really?
I've never known that till I heard that segment.
Well, you know, I heard a different version of that. I thought that was what you said to what the understudy said to the, or hoped for the lead. Break a leg so I can go on instead of you. But
well,
I guess
how many stories are there about great stars becoming a star because the main star got sick? You know, it's a great movie plot, too. In a lot of old 1940s movies, I've seen them all.
Okay. That was a very good interview with Karen Niblock over at Nevada High School, who is director of the play that they're doing this weekend, October 31st and November 1st at 7 o'clock, Murder in the Knife Room.
I'm sure it'll be well attended. You know, my brother used to be a band director, and he said that every child is tied to 9 adults who live in the area. That's how you get a sellout.
Mm-hmm. We have a little time. We tried call-ins a few weeks ago.
I have someone who can explain the break a leg a bit more. He's
okay.
on the air.
That's great.
Okay.
Hi.
I think his name is Ron. Here.
Okay. So,
Susan.
Yes?
I was reading years ago about the break a leg comment in theater. And from what I remember, it was a young man put together a theatrical production, and it was really like a shoestring operation, and he was really cutting it close financially. And the night before they had this production, he fell down and broke his leg, which meant that the theatrical production could not go on, and he was going to be totally broke. Well, he had some sympathetic patron come along and save the financial day. And then when he healed up, then the production went on, and he became, I guess, fairly successful in theater. So the old phrase was that break a leg, which means, you know, to become successful even in adversity.
That's another great tradition.
Yeah, that's a great story. That's probably the real one. But maybe they're all real in different ways. Well, thanks, Ron.
Okay,
and thanks,
you're welcome.
Hey, thanks for calling in. We're going to hopefully play a little more Halloween music and hope for another Halloween call in, maybe.
Life's no fun without a good scare.
That's our job.
But we're not mean in our town of Halloween.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Turn a tin jack, might catch you in the back and
scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin.
We need to get a call number, 232-0356. How did Ron know our number?
I don't know. We must be famous.
I recognize his voice. He's a station volunteer. He was listening. He said, hey, they need some help.
They do need help, yes. We need help every day.
Okay. So, have we got a call in? Hello. Who is this and where are you?
This is Karen Mahoney. I'm from the Flat Tire Lounge in Madrid.
The Flat Tire Lounge? Wow.
Yeah. So, what are you doing for Halloween?
We're doing a dead rock star theme at the bar, and you can dress up as your favorite dead rock star, like Elvis Presley or Janis Joplin or any of them.
Fantastic. You know, I have a real identity with that because I was born on February 3rd. Well, on February 3rd, 1959, right here in Iowa, the Big Bopper and Ritchie Valens and Buddy Holly went down in a plane on my 16th birthday. So I really identify with dead rock stars.
Yeah, we remember when they were live rock stars. Yes. But you could have a pretty crowded room with everybody being a different dead rock star. Isn't that right?
Yes, we're hoping for that. Yes, there's a lot of different ones, and we're hoping for a good turnout with all the different dead rock stars like Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison. It'll be interesting to see all the costumes.
Yeah, it will be. I understand that you have a contest for the best costumes. Is that right?
We do. We have. We're going to be giving away a guitar for the grand prize, and the music that night is going to be by DJ K and DJ Mantooth, which is a local DJ. Their names are Andy Knaus and Ben Badgley from Madrid area. So they will be at the bar from 9 to 1 that night, also doing music from people from, the dead rock stars, doing Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin songs. So it'll be a good time.
Sounds like it. Well, there's no question what those DJs are going to be playing, all right.
No, old-time rocks. Now, by the way, is this the first time you've done this?
It's the first time we've done this theme. We do Halloween parties every year, but this year this is the first time we've done this theme as a dead rock star.
So you're used to this and you expect a big crowd because that's what's happened in the past.
Yes, it is. Yes, yeah. So we're hoping for a good crowd Friday night, which I think it will be. We've advertised a lot, so I'm hoping it is.
So you're out on the High Trestle Trail in Madrid, is that right?
We are. We're right next to it. Yep, the trail runs right beside our bar, so we get a lot of traffic in there.
But you're not expecting a lot of bicyclists on Halloween.
Probably not, due to the weather. Probably not. It'll probably just be people that will be coming to the Halloween party dressed up.
This image of the Big Bopper riding in on a bike. You know?
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And have a fun party.
All right, thank you.
Enjoy, enjoy. Well, that's an original idea, the Dead Rock Star Halloween Party at the Flat Tire Lounge in Madrid, right on the High Trestle Trail.
We call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song. Halloween,
thanks for listening to our special 7-county edition of Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events of special interest to those in our wider listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host,
Paul Wearson. And today we've covered the Back from the Dead walk at the Story County Conservation Center, Spirits of the Garden from Ryman Gardens, the Pumpkin Train on the Boone Scenic Valley Railroad, and the Nevada High School play, Murder in the Knife Room.
And don't forget to mention that our call from Madrid for the Dead Rockstar Party at the Flat Tire Lounge. That's an unusual event. You say you might be, that'll be interesting. I'm trying to envision your costume.
It would be nice if she called back and said how it went and who won and what they were dressed as.
It would be fun to have the pictures on that one. But now it's in time to invite you to let us know what's happening in your town. You can call in or you can give us a call here at the station on our regular line, 515-292-2878, or you can email us at khoiradio@gmail.com. We're looking for music and drama as well as stories of the people living in your towns. So please help us by contacting us. We'd especially appreciate your name and phone number if you have something to tell us. Or you can call us at our regular line and leave a message for the county reporter, 292-2610. We won't be there, but you can leave us a message.
Well, guests we've heard today on today's show, Linda Zolotel, Beth Wessel-Crochelle, and Karen Niblock. Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Brown.
Music you heard today included This is Halloween by Citizens of Halloween from the CD The Nightmare Before Christmas. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
This show airs at 7 a.m., but will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. It's also being streamed live at khoifm.org. You can also listen to all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all the Local Talk shows we produced since we went on the air in 2012.
There's a special feature on the website, too, because if you click the Listen Here button, not the red one, the Listen Here, but more information, you can have the links to all the organizations that we mention on the show.
And if you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and help us find the stories you'd like to hear. Don't forget, you can give us your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878, or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with county in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292 2878 or, since we have our wider listening area, 515-292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and
see you again
on the radio.